So Hebrews chapter 12, starting at verse 3. Consider him who endured such hostility against himself from sinners, so that you may not grow weary or lose heart. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. And you have forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as children. My child, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, or lose heart when you are punished by him. For the Lord disciplines those whom he loves, and chastises every child whom he accepts. Endure trials for the sake of discipline. God is treating you as children. For what child is there whom a parent does not discipline? If you do not have that discipline in which all children share, then you are illegitimate and not his children. Moreover, we had human parents to discipline us, and we respected them. Should we not be even more willing to be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time as seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, in order that we may share his holiness. Now, discipline always seems painful rather than pleasant at the time, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. This is the word of the Lord.
Brilliant. Thanks for that, Catherine. Do keep your Bibles open. What I'd love you to do, kind of as we kick off, is on your table, you've got a kind of pads and paper, is grab a sheet of paper, grab a pencil, and I want you to think, what's the biggest trial that you are currently facing? So what's the biggest trial that you're currently facing? It might be something you think of as a trial. Maybe you think of it as a difficulty or a struggle or a hardship. So have a think, what's the biggest trial that you are currently facing? And just jot that down. Obviously, you don't have to show that to anyone. I'm not going to ask you to do that either at any stage. Let me give you a few examples of my own. I'm actually going to give you some old examples, and hopefully you'll see later on why I'm giving you older ones rather than new ones. But something I found quite difficult, big struggle for me, was school. I didn't really like school. Some people say school is, they're the best years of your life. And every time someone says that, I think you've had a rubbish life. Because my life has been far better since I left school than it ever was there. You know, we all know the phrase, don't we? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names may never hurt me. But of course, that's just not true, is it? We all know that. And, you know, for all the nice things that people have said about me down the years, I don't remember that many of them. But yet, if you were to ask me to remember the comments that were negative or hurtful or upsetting, I could make a pretty comprehensive list. And so when I was at school, I didn't really fit in. I was a bit of an outsider. I always felt I was on the outside looking in. I wasn't cool. I didn't look right. I didn't mix with the right people. And so effectively, you know, that has an effect on you. I think I was pretty much quite an insecure person. I was quite broken. I think I carried a lot of those wounds with me through school and out of school. I didn't really have much value in my own person. And even now, I still kind of, you know, that comes back. I always feel like I'm a little bit on the outside of things. So school was a difficult time. Another example would be work. So before I worked here, I worked for a very high Anglo-Catholic church in Coventry. And not long after I arrived, my boss, the vicar, who'd been there for quite a while, suffered a nervous breakdown. And he didn't stop working, though. And that meant that when you went into work, you never knew what he was going to be like. Was he going to be up or was he going to be down? And I can remember, well, his memory was affected and things like that. And so I can remember days where he would just erupt, be absolutely screaming in my face over something that I hadn't done, even though we talked about it before. And eventually I ended up getting a written warning. I had to come up before the PCC in an emergency meeting. I went in on a Monday evening, basically to defend myself against allegations, some of which had some basis in truth, but I felt were distortions, some of which were completely untrue. And so I went in, and as I laid out my kind of defense, he erupted. He had to be physically restrained from attacking me. By the end, I was in tears. My wife, Becca, was there. She was in tears. And effectively, I handed in my resignation, and they said, well, just don't come back. Don't need to work your notice. So I went to work Monday evening with a job, woke up Tuesday morning with no job. Just a paycheck saying, here's your next month's wages, and then received a letter saying, if I ever see you in the parish again, I'm going to sue you. I'm going to sue you for libel against me. And that was all in our first year of marriage. People often say the first year of marriage is the most difficult. I say, oh yeah, tell me about it. Psychopathic vicars attacking you, potential lawsuits. People go, what? I'm like, oh, just me. Anyway. So it was a pretty difficult time, pretty painful. But when those things are going on, and I guess of those things you've got written down, while these things are going on, you kind of think, well, why is this happening? Why me, God? God, I thought you loved me. Haven't I kind of served you and tried to do what I can? Why haven't you taken this thing away? Why haven't you made it any easier? Maybe you've even thought, God, are you even there, in the face of those things? And so when we face hardships, it makes us question God. And basically, these guys here in this passage, the Hebrew church, they're facing trials. We don't know all the details, but in verse 3, they're told to consider Jesus, who endured such hostility against himself from sinners. Now, presumably, they're being told that because they're facing hostility from sinners from outside the church. But what's the danger for them in that situation? Have a look at verse 3. What's the danger for them? They could grow weary. That's right. Thank you, Greg. So you may not grow weary or lose heart. Clearly, that's a danger, that they might just give up in the face of their suffering. They'll say, we can't go on anymore. We're too tired out by all this stuff. I don't know if you've ever felt like that, when stuff just got too much. You say, oh, I can't do this anymore. You just kind of go, oh, Lord, please, no more. I just can't do it. And the writer goes on to say, well, listen, guys, you've forgotten something in verse 5. You've forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as children. My child, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord or lose heart when you're punished by him. It says, the stuff you're facing, the struggles, the hardships, that's God's discipline on you. But don't lose heart. Don't take that lightly. Why? Well, verse 6, for the Lord disciplines those whom he loves and chastises every child whom he accepts. Saying, look, if you're going through difficult times, you're facing struggles, it's because you are loved by God. It's because you are an accepted child of God. These things mean God does love you, not the opposite. And we kind of go, huh? What? That doesn't really make much sense. Don't understand. But the thing is, we're being treated like a child. Have a look at verses 7 and 8. Endure trials for the sake of discipline. God is treating you as children. For what child is there whom a parent does not discipline? If you do not have that discipline in which all children share, then you are illegitimate and not his children. So that the struggles, the things maybe we've written down, those hardships, they're God's discipline. That's what parents do. We discipline our children, and we do that because we love them. I remember when I was a teenager, my parents would say to me, you can't do this. We don't want you watching that. I'd like you back by this time. You're not hanging around with these people. And basically, I used to think, they're just doing it to be jerks. I'll be with my friends, I'll be like, oh, my parents are such losers. They're really sad. They don't understand anything. And now, though, I realize that all those things were actually, they were doing it for my own good. And like sometimes people think, don't they, if I had a, it would be great to have a parent who just, let you do whatever. But, and this might be a bit controversial, but I think, if you've got a parent who says, yeah, just do whatever, or you had a parent like that, I think when someone just says do whatever, effectively they're saying do whatever you like because I don't really care. I don't really think that's a loving thing at all. I've got two children, Melody, who was 3 yesterday, and Clara, who's turning one next month. And, they misbehave sometimes. I've got to discipline them. Mostly Melody, because she's a bit older. She understands more. But when they do something wrong, or when Melody does something wrong, I say, no, you do not do, and then insert whatever in there, and I have to kind of just lay the verbal smackdown on her sometimes. And when I do it, I say something to her, I'm firm with her, her little lip goes, she goes, like that, and her little face scrunches up, and something inside me just kind of melts, and I'm like, oh, maybe I should just let her off, because I clearly upset her. But I know, if I let her off, it's not going to make any difference. I've got to follow through. She's not going to learn unless I discipline her. So one example of that would be a while ago, it got to dinner time. I said, what do you want for dinner? She said, pasta. I was like, brilliant. Went and made the pasta. Brought the pasta back. And clearly, I can't remember what exactly it was. Because I'm such a monster, I think she wanted cheese on it. I put the cheese in it. The cheese had melted in. Basically, she hit the roof. Went mental. She was refusing to eat. She was screaming. She's like strapped into a chair. I want to get down, Daddy. I don't want this. Something else, Daddy. Something else. And I was like, no. I was like, you're eating it. You asked for pasta. You're going to eat the pasta. And she's kicking and screaming and hollering. And eventually, I said, right, I'm just going to leave you there. I said, I'm going to take Clara upstairs, get her ready for bed. When I come down, I want you to have eaten it. So I took her upstairs, took Clara upstairs, came back down. She's calmed down by then a little bit. She's just starting to eat. Coached her through the rest of it. She ate it. We had a bit of a chat about it. She kind of said sorry. It was all fine. And the thing is, though, I didn't do that. I hopefully listened to that. You don't think I'm a monster. I didn't do that to traumatize her, but I wanted her to learn something. First of all, just some basic skills about nutrition, No, you cannot just eat Marmite toast and Baby Bells for your whole life. It doesn't work like that. But I wanted her to learn as well that you can't just be, demanding. You can't say, I'd like this, and then just discard it and be, rude to people. I've heard to appreciate that, I've put a bit of time into preparing that for her and to be grateful and stuff like that. I'm not doing those things to be a jerk. I'm not doing that because I don't love her. It's actually exactly the opposite, really. I'm training her, in my mind, to try and have Christ-like values. And sometimes that's going to be painful for her. It's going to be hurtful for her. She's going to think, maybe Daddy doesn't love me anymore because he's just got angry with me and he shouted at me. There's something wrong between us. But it's because I do love her that sometimes I've got to kind of metaphorically kick her butt sometimes so she doesn't grow up into a complete little punk. So, things are, we question when we're experiencing this discipline from God, we question God, whether he's there, whether he loves us. But actually, I think this passage is showing us that hardships are God's loving training of his children. And it's a mark of God's love, this discipline, because it's training for our good. There's a classic phrase that we see in society all the time, isn't it? No pain, no gain. Which really flies in the face of my motto, which is no pain, good. That's what I like to live by. But when I go down to the gym, you see personal trainers there. Slightly richer people than I have a personal trainer. And if you had no context on what they were doing, you would just think that these guys absolutely hate the people they're working with. Because they're standing there over this kind of sweating mass, screaming at them, going, come on, go on, two more. And they're going, oh, I can't do anymore. And the thing is that they're not doing it because they hate them or they don't like them. They're doing it because they know that they want to get results. They want these people to achieve, and they know they've got to go through an element of pain in order to get there. No marathon runner wins without any hard training. No musician will master an instrument without long, hard hours of practice. Bob Coughlin, who's a Christian worship leader, said this. He said, some people say to me, I wish I could play the piano like you do. My standard reply is, you can. Just takes a little gifting and practicing 4 hours a day for 4 years. And so apparently he said that to someone, and the person said he found that quite discouraging. And the reason he found it discouraging was because he wanted the result, but he didn't like the idea of having to go through all the hard work and enduring in the first place. Like I said earlier, I go to the gym, and this time of the year is the time of year I hate in the gym because it's full of what I call the January gymmers. Now, January gymmers are those people who've sat through Christmas, they feel they've eaten a few too many pies, a few too many glasses of old wine, and they make a New Year's resolution and say, this is it, I'm going to get fit now. And so they all decide to join the gym. And so when you go to the gym, it's absolutely round with a bunch of people you've never seen before, just taking up all the equipment. They're all taking 10 hours longer than everybody else, and they're just right pain in the bum, quite frankly. But it doesn't bother me too much because I know that they're not going to last. Because I guarantee you that by Valentine's Day, most of them will have swapped the gym for McDonald's. They'll be back there. Because they'll have found, because they wanted the result, but they didn't want the work. Okay? Really, for them, they want all the gain, but no pain. And so they just give up. But some people get it. Some people understand you do have to put the work in, or you do have to go through tough things in order to grow. Muhammad Ali, who's probably one of the greatest boxers of all time, maybe one of the greatest athletes, said this. He said, "I hated every minute of training, but I said, don't quit. Suffer now and live the rest of your life as a champion." That's basically biblical, isn't it? That's verse 11, if you have a look at verse 11. "Now discipline always seems painful rather than pleasant at the time, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it." It's saying, look, suffer now, endure the difficult stuff now, because later it will produce something. There will be a result that's worth getting. And so to kind of vaguely illustrate this, I've got a little thing to do. I've got Amy and Kate are going to come up. They're going to come and help me out. If you come up, you can go there and there, that's fine. So, you're going to be competing against one another in order to win this lovely prize of chocolate celebrations, okay? I think it's a pretty good prize. Yeah? Good, we'll agree. What you're going to be doing, because, you know, it's only a month away from Christmas still, so we're still in the Christmas mode. I thought we'd do a sprout-eating contest. So, what you're going to do is you're going to have 45 seconds to go head-to-head in eating these sprouts. Basically, it'll be whoever eats the most in 45 seconds or finishes the bowl. Seems unlikely, but you never know. And what we're going to do, if you take a bowl each, it has to be fully finished. You can't just stick them all in your mouth and then show me the remains. It has to be gone. I don't want to see that. We're going to split you down the middle. So Amy, if you come over here, you guys over this side, you're going to be with Kate, okay? You're going to be our cloud of witnesses. You're going to be cheering her on, encouraging her. And you guys kind of this way, you're going to be encouraging Amy. We did a thing a few weeks ago with the squatting, and we all just watched in pretty much silence. This is your opportunity to do some cheering on, okay? Someone going to do me 45 seconds? Burnsy's going to do me 45 seconds. So when Burnsy says go, you're going to go head to head, and you guys are going to be as supportive as you can, okay?
Yes.
Good. Okay, we're in the room. Good. We're all here still. Brilliant. So we just... Looking very quiet over here. Come on. Five seconds. Five. Ding. Okay, that's it. That's it. Okay, well done. Well done. So, Kate, there's four left in there. You started with seven. That is abysmal. You know. Like, I think it's a clear victory for Kate there. So big. Thanks, Kate. Just tell me, Kate, was that a particularly pleasant experience?
Not really.
Not really. But was it worth it?
Yeah.
Brilliant. And because I'm not a complete monster, I've got you these as well, just as a consolation prize. So a big round of applause for Amy and for Kate. But the point was to illustrate, just briefly, and in a little bit of a fun way, that sometimes we will go through hard things, endure stuff we don't like and that's not enjoyable, if we know that actually it's going to have a result that's going to be beneficial to us, a good thing, and that it's not just completely meaningless. I doubt they would have wanted to do that if there was nothing worth getting at the end. And it's a bit like that with, you know, so with this parenting thing we've seen here, parental discipline can seem really hard at the time, but I guess most of us could probably look back and see how it was for our own good. We probably understand that we train and it's hard, it's painful, it's not pleasant, but it yields a result later. And it's just like that with God. Because we're told, aren't we, in verse 11, as I said before, discipline always seems painful rather than pleasant at the time, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. Or as verse 10 says, he disciplines us for our good in order that we may share in his holiness. God puts us through these things because those things serve to make us more like Jesus. So when we're facing these hard times, we'd be tempted to question God, but actually, as we've seen, hardships are God's loving training of his children. And I want you to be encouraged by this, because if you're finding it hard to run the Christian race, well, I think you're finding it hard to run the Christian race because you are running the Christian race. It's because you are a loved child of God who's in training. You know, most of us here have probably been to a sports day and seen other people run a race. It's not hard to watch someone race. It's not hard as a spectator. It's hard if you're in the race. So the question I think for us is, well, how are we going to respond? How are we going to respond to God's training? I think there's really three basic responses that come out of the passage. First of all, we've talked about it a bit already. We can get weary and lose heart. So we can just end up with a faith that becomes a bit sluggish or lackluster. We might not stop being a Christian. We might still come to church and go to house group or go to youth group and all those kind of things. But it's just pretty joyless. We're just kind of going through the motions. Or we may get weary and tired to the point that we just stop running. And if that describes you, I wanted to ask you to do something which I think is quite difficult when you're going through a difficult time. I want you to try and look beyond your own struggle and your own self and just think, what effect does this have on those around me? So we live in a society that's very individual, but I think, what effect does this have on those around me? If I become lackluster, I slow down, I leave entirely. Sometimes I look at teenagers kind of involved in our youth group, connected to the youth group in some way, and I think, why is this person so kind of unenthusiastic about Jesus? Why do they just seem not bothered at all? You know, just so kind of apathetic. And then I look at the parent and I go, oh, okay, now I get it. Because more often than not, there's a direct correlation. It's not a hard and fast rule, but you'd be surprised how many times it is true. Parent goes off the boil, the kids follow. We need to think about the effect that we'll have on other people when our race begins to slow down. Second way we can respond, I think, is to just take it lightly, as verse 5 says. Verse 5 says, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord. And I think what that means is we could just ignore God's discipline, not listen to the training and the person who's training us. So let me ask you a question. Imagine after this service, a Christian here came up to you and challenged you about some attitude or action in your life in an attempt to kind of lovingly correct you. How do you think you would react to that? Would you kind of think, well, how dare they? Who do they think they are, you know, judging me? I think that's what this is talking about partly. That's taking it lightly. That's hearing the training but not wanting to accept it. I think the other way we could respond is to say, thank you. Thank you, God, for allowing me to hear that hard word, even though it wasn't nice for me to hear. Thank you for letting me hear that, because you want to train me to be more like you, to get rid of those things in my life that don't glorify you. So don't take it lightly. Don't take your struggles lightly. Don't push back against the trainer, because we've got a trainer who knows best. And then these last ones, I've kind of grouped them together. I want you to kind of do this one here. So have a look at verse 3. What are we told to do in verse 3? Consider Jesus. Thank you. Consider him who endured such hostility against himself from sinners. Our response can be to consider Jesus. Fix our eyes on Jesus, as those first verses in chapter 12 say. Remember Jesus' example. Robert Baden-Powell, who obviously set up the Boy Scouts, said this: success in training the boy depends largely on the scoutmaster's own personal example. Well, you and I, we've got the perfect scoutmaster. We've got Jesus, somebody who knows what it's like to go through hardship. Actually, someone who has endured far worse than we have. As it says down in verse 4, doesn't it? In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. But Jesus has. Jesus was beaten and whipped. He was forced to carry a heavy cross through the streets as people spat at him and mocked him. And they took him up to that hill and they stripped him naked and they nailed him to a cross. And they crucified him. He endured all that, but yet he did not grow weary. He did not lose heart. He ran the race right to the finish. And if anything, he ran the benchmark race. So look to Jesus in your struggles, in your suffering. Look to him, look to his example, because he will give you encouragement and he will also give you perspective that next to what he went through, what we go through is often very small. What about verse 7? What are we told to do in verse 7? Endure, yeah, endure trials for the sake of discipline. It's not just keep going, not just carry on, but endure. It sounds like it's going to be unpleasant. It won't necessarily be nice. Enduring means suffering something patiently. It won't be nice, but we know it leads to something. There is a payoff. And part of the reason I had you guys cheer on Kate and Amy earlier was because I think that's an important part of enduring. Again, society, individualistic, it's about me, I've got to keep going. We've got to keep going. When people are going through hardships and struggles, we, as their brothers and sisters in Christ, should be the ones encouraging them, cheering them on, helping them to endure through those difficult times. And then last one, verse 9. What does it say in verse 9 we should do? Anyone?
Be subject to God.
Brilliant, thank you. Vicar's got it, it's good. Should we not be even more willing to be subject to the Father of spirits and live? Subject ourselves to the Father, put ourselves under the Father. Why? Well, it's parental discipline, isn't it? And he says, doesn't he, parental discipline, it's limited. Sometimes parents get it wrong, but God doesn't get it wrong. God is doing this for our good and so that we might live. So subject yourself to God. And I think there's a question we can ask ourselves which will be really helpful when we're going through struggles. And it's this. What is God trying to teach me? Because you know what, when I look back at those hard times in school, it was difficult at the time. But now, I'll tell you what, I find it really easy to love the outsider. I can look around a group of people, be in a group, and for me, it's really easy to identify the people who are there. I say this affectionately, the freaks and geeks. And I say that because I'm one of them. The freaks and geeks of a group, the people who I know don't really fit in, and for whom actually school is probably pretty hard. And God's just given me a heart for those people because I've been there, I know what it's like. And so when they come to something, I just want them to know that they're loved and that they are part of our group, that they're included no matter what they're like. Bring them in. I wouldn't have had that if I hadn't gone through that myself. Or I think about that situation at work in Coventry, deeply unpleasant, but it taught me a lot of things. It taught me a lot about how not to manage other people, how not to work with others, and it highlighted ungodly attitudes in me that I probably wouldn't have necessarily noticed if I hadn't gone through that. And sometimes I think, you know, would I change these things if I could go back and do it all again? And the answer is no. I wouldn't change them because those things have been formative events that God has used to train me. They've been unpleasant, but I can see now how God was working for my good. They've produced, or they've allowed me to share in God's holiness more. It's produced the fruit of righteousness. And I guess, you know, our theme verse of the year, isn't it? I want to know Christ, his power and his suffering. I hope that God will allow me to know more of that suffering, that I would grow more like Jesus through it. Maybe what you could do now is just think about that thing you wrote down, biggest thing you're currently facing. And ask yourself this, maybe try and write something down. What might my loving Father be trying to teach me through this? That's what I want you to do. What might my loving Father be trying to teach me through this? See if you can do that. I'll give you maybe have 30 seconds to think about that. And we're just going to close with a video. It's only 2 minutes. It's John Piper. He's actually speaking on 2 Corinthians 4, but I think there's a lot of overlap. If you know 2 Corinthians 4, you'll recognize the language. But I think a lot of it does overlap with this. See?
Not only is all your affliction momentary, not only is all your affliction light in comparison to eternity and the glory there, but all of it is totally meaningful. Every millisecond of your pain from the fallen nature or fallen man, every millisecond of your misery in the path of obedience is producing a peculiar glory you will get because of that. I don't care if it was cancer or criticism. I don't care if it was slander or sickness. It wasn't meaningless. It's doing something. It's not meaningless. Of course you can't see what it's doing. Don't look to what is seen. When your mom dies, when your kid dies, when you got cancer at 40, when a car careens into the sidewalk and takes her out, don't say, "It's meaningless." It's not. It's working for you an eternal weight of glory. Therefore, do not lose heart, but take these truths and day by day focus on them. Preach them to yourself every morning. Get alone with God and preach His word into your mind until your heart sings with confidence that you are new and cared for.